Hi everybody and welcome to another edition of the Cameo Launch Short Film Podcast with me, Nigel Morgan, and joining me, as always, is our trying to find a really complimentary adjective for you, George. I was going to go with...
Human.
That's a noun.
Yeah, that's a compliment.
No, I was going to go with incandescent.
Incandescent.
Then I realised I'm not 100% sure what that word means.
Yeah, does that mean I produce light?
Yes, and that's why.
And also, what does iridescent mean? Whilst we're at it.
I don't know, but...
incandescent means emitting light as a result of being heated, so that works.
So joining me is the hot and bright George Mole.
Fantastic. Just in case you needed to know, iridescent means I would be showing luminous colours that seem to change when seen from different angles. So it's all around the same sort of thing. I'm just a bright burning star that lights up your podcast every week.
The video producing human kaleidoscope, George Mole.
Yeah, we'll go
with
that.
There you go, let's run with that.
We'll go with that.
So George, how's life as a video producing human kaleidoscope?
As a video producing human kaleidoscope, it's going quite well. Not too bad. Just keeping on. With life in a pandemic, but still making videos. So, yeah.
Now, from a news perspective, there are a couple of things that we are going to talk about, but there is definitely one thing that we are not going to talk about because we've spoken about it several times over the last few episodes. So, just as a heads up to any listeners out there, we will not be discussing Tenet.
No, I'm at the end of my Tenet with it.
We'll definitely not be discussing the fact that it will be being released in international markets before it is released in its domestic American market. We definitely won't say anything about the fact that it will be released in the UK as one of its first ports of call on August the 26th.
Yeah, that's not going to come out.
Along with a number of European territories before opening in the United States in early September. And then only in a phased manner as it is rolled out to areas deemed safe in terms of their infection rates and confirmed COVID cases. So if we were talking about it, it would be an interesting topic to touch on, given that this is kind of going back to the way things used to be in terms of how films get released. I'm not sure anybody listening would probably remember the good old days when things would come out in one country and then would slowly be rolled out to the likes of us. But in the case of Tenet, the fact that a global day and date release is no longer possible, given the situation with the coronavirus and its varying impacts in different countries, we're now looking at a scenario in which we get one of Hollywood's biggest blockbusters before Hollywood does. An interesting one.
What a world.
George, what do you think about this one in terms of how it reflects the different approaches to combating the coronavirus and the economic impacts on different countries as a result?
Yeah, I'd say it's definitely interesting. I mean, we're not talking about this at all. But if we were talking about this whole situation, yeah, it's interesting. It's cool in a way to think that we might get the film before its domestic market is supposed to get it. But I'm going to be repeating myself when I say the exact same things. Unless it's safe and viable in every country, then you don't release it. Obviously, America is not the place for that right now, so it makes sense that it's going to be everywhere else but there.
Yeah, I think one of the ways in which I think it might be different is the amount of time that it plays as well. Because normally with your day and date releases, they come out just about everywhere on the same day.
Yeah.
And you're looking at a sort of release window of maybe a month, 6 weeks, if it does quite well.
Yeah.
On average. In this case, I think it will need to be playing for a lot longer. There'll be fewer films being released anyway. So there'll be less to see at the cinema outside of sort of library titles. And on top of that, for any cinemas that are open, they'll have to abide by government guidelines in terms of capacity, spacing, sanitation, all that kind of stuff. How clean they keep auditoriums will have an impact on how many showings a day they can do. So per showing or per week, then you see a lot lower grosses than you'd normally see, especially for a film this size. So it will go back to the way things were way back in the day when they'd not just be released by country, but by region. you might have heard like Tarantino talk about when he was a kid and those grindhouse type movies would get released. They'd have a limited number of prints and they'd go from your big cities, so your LAs and your Chicago's and your New York's and so on. And when they'd start their run, there'd be these pristine prints and, you know, super high quality. And by the time it got to Backwater Hicksville, then they'd be all rough and
grainy and sound washed out,
have scratches all over the place and that kind of thing. And that's the state that he would normally end up seeing him in, which obviously translates to the way that he made the grindhouse double bill with Robert Rodriguez.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's basically kind of going back to that, in that even when it is finally released in America, it will be released probably in the Midwest before it's released in New York, before it's released in LA.
It's weird.
So one of the things that does throw up, obviously, is the danger of piracy.
Yeah, I was literally just about to say, that's the main thought I have about it. Every single person in America who can will just type in watch Tenet online into Google and they will find a way to watch it. With Christopher Nolan's films especially, as we've said many, many times, they 100% deserve to be seen in the cinema, ideally IMAX. But yeah, I guess a lot of people are going to find a really awful rip online and they're going to end up watching it that way, because why wouldn't you? That people, trolls from Europe could easily just go online and spam boards with all of the spoilers for Tenet. So it'll be really difficult to avoid it. So I could understand why some people would choose to piracy, because they'd have no other option, which sucks. That is not something that I want for the film industry, obviously.
No. And be forgiven for thinking that the logical thing to do would just to be to put it back by a year.
Yeah.
But at the same time, the cinemas need something. They can't be propped up by government subsidies indefinitely. No. And if they don't have a means of getting people back into the cinema, then they're not going to be open by the time the film is ready to be released. It's very much a rock and a hard place situation, and somebody has to be first through the door. And if you're going to do it with anything, then it might as well be something that A, people will have turned out to see anyway, and B, the kind of film that demands that sort of big screen experience. So you're more likely to, even if you do end up pirating the film, you're more likely to still go and see it at a cinema if that's available to you than most of the other films that come out, probably more than a Black Widow.
No, I've seen comments on Reddit this morning of people saying exactly the same thing, saying when it goes to Europe, I will find a copy, I will watch it, and then I will also see it in IMAX as soon as I can. That's one Redditor's opinion. That's what several other people seem to agree with them. So it's interesting to see, but I guess we'll see what happens.
Yes, we'll see what happens with the film that we're not discussing,
because
we've spoken about it entirely too much over the last few episodes. What we will talk about, however, is that the British government has given a boost to restarting film and TV production in the UK with an emergency COVID insurance fund of £500 million.
Yay.
So, according to Deadline, in a massive boost for an industry stricken by the pandemic, trade body PACT announced the insurance solution in a release on Tuesday afternoon. It signals that producers can get back into filming with a safety net, given that the fund will effectively underwrite the cost of productions closing in the event of a second lockdown. So, PACT, flanked by the BFI and major industry players, has led months of constructive talks with the government over an insurance solution. The discussions have taken longer than hoped due to the unprecedented nature of the intervention and the fact that European Union clearance was required. So, with a bit more of a boost to film and TV, it does seem that the government is listening to people who are underscoring the importance of getting these things going. Restarting the economy has clearly been a top priority of this government, to the point where it's become a sticking point to people who believe that not enough has been done on the actual public health front in terms of combating the virus, and that we're just inviting a second wave by restarting the economy in the manner in which it's being done. At the same time, we are where we are, and we can't go back and redo things that should have been done in a more robust and efficient manner at the beginning. But businesses are struggling. Entire industries are struggling as well. So again, it's a rock and a hard place situation. So the fact that they have underwritten these productions in the event of a second wave that forces shutdowns, I'd say is a pretty positive thing. So George, what are your thoughts on this step by the government?
Yeah, same again. It's great. great that the money's here. Again, for a lot of people, it was too little too late. I mean, I fear for the people who have already been furloughed and lost jobs completely because they were, you know, lower rungs of the ladder, as it were, on the, all those independent shoots or businesses or whatever. So I feel for those people. I mean, as a fan, I'm very happy that shows like The Witcher and Sex Education, which I'm a fan of, might be able to start shooting again, and maybe I won't have to wait as long to see them. But that's not as important. It's nice to know that, yes, maybe those films might not come out in 2022. They might actually come out in 2021 instead. That's great for me as a fan. Very happy that I might be able to see some of those shows. But yes, actually zooming out and looking at it from that point of view, where it's livelihoods and public health, it's still very worrying, but I'm glad to see that something's been done.
Yeah. I mean, because one of the things we discussed before is the fact that it's more than just big companies, that a lot of this industry is driven by people who work on a freelance basis. So these are people who wouldn't have been able to benefit from the furlough scheme. So if there is a scenario in which people can have a certain amount of confidence in going back to work, then I guess the only other thing to do is for individual organizations, individual productions, to ensure that they have robust enough measures in place in terms of how they socially distance a shoot. I don't know how you would do that, especially on a big shoot. That's kind of been one of the running themes of how the reopening of the economy has gone so far, is a lot of it has actually been left up to individual employers. So I guess it's going to be one of those case-by-case basis scenarios where people will just have to come up with their own rules and conduct themselves as safely as possible. So good news in terms of productions, and we'll see how that all plays out. Now, getting into what you're all obviously here for, the reviews of our short film picks this week. Firstly, we have a film from 2013. This one, whilst being slightly on the older side, is, for my money, an absolute classic.
Yeah.
So this film is called The Landing, and it's directed by Josh Tanner and written by Josh Tanner and Jade Vanderlei. So this film sees a man returning to the Midwestern farm of his childhood on a desperate mission to unearth the horrifying truth of what landed there in the summer of 1960. So from the outset, this is outlined as a potential alien landing in rural 1960s America at the height of the Cold War. As the Cold War is about to enter its height, I should say. And we see a story play out between a young boy and his father, a boy who is very sort of captivated by fantastical stories of man battling aliens from the stars, while his dad is very much focused on the quote-unquote red threat of the day. The story kind of revolves around their relationship, with the father being consumed by bitterness and regret for being passed over in terms of wanting to join the military and not being able to, in the same way that his brothers did. And you see sort of that resentment and that bitterness kind of poisoning his relationship with his son as the story kicks off and an unidentified object lands in the field of their farm, and the boy tries to uncover exactly what it is that landed there. So this is a thriller. It's a drama. I like the fact that it kind of goes into the concept of enemy, because it doesn't necessarily apply to who the film initially suggests it applies to.
Yeah.
And the way that the film kind of paces itself in revealing exactly what it is that has landed in this farm and how that impacts both of their lives, I think is done absolutely brilliantly. And it's done with a great amount of detail to visual storytelling as well. So visually, it introduces the theme of the other. It introduces the sort of monster at the door type threat, and then starts to reveal that that monster, that enemy, is something other than what you thought it was. I think it's just so well written.
Yeah.
And it just looks brilliant. It looks gorgeous. The cinematography is outstanding.
First note I absolutely wrote was just absolutely beautiful cinematography. It's the same one that's on the poster. The boy touching the orb is absolutely beautiful. And then that moment in the film as well is just awe. It's just pure awe when you're staring at it. It's so beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. Absolutely, absolutely. And some of the effects that are done as well. If you do get a chance to watch this film, which we do highly recommend you do, there is also a VFX of the landing short video as well. And that gives you an idea of the amount of special effects that were actually used in the film. And it's stunning, absolutely stunning, because as you watch the film, you don't notice them at all. There are certain things which you know, obviously, are special effects, but there are a whole load of other special effects in there that you just would not pick up on at all. The lengths they go to kind of build a world.
Absolutely.
And the craft involved in kind of pulling you into it. Yeah, it's just brilliant. It is really, really good. What were your thoughts on it, other than cinematography that you mentioned already?
Yeah, I loved it. Again, I'm recommending this film. I thought it was very enjoyable. I loved her. The opening is great. You're hooked straight away. You want to know what's going to happen based on everything you see, which is obviously what you want in any form of screenplay or film, when you want the audience to want to continue watching, which was great. I was never checking the time or trying to find out the length. I was there from start to finish. Really enjoyed the score. I like the sound effects with the crickets in the background, which is in any Midwestern shot of someone on a farm, they're going to have crickets as part of the diegetic sound, because obviously that is part of the environment, but they really add to the tension. You can, if you're listening out for it, you can hear when the crickets have been like muted and then brought up again to show tension between the father and the son. I just thought that was very well done.
It's basically all the little things.
Yes, every single thing that's come together to make this great film, yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, there are certain bits of the film where they do a certain amount of expositing, but when that exposition comes, it's really just to fill out what you can already see and feel anyway. Yes. They don't have to outline what the relationship is between this father and this son.
There's no handholding.
No, absolutely not. And they do a fantastic job of kind of ratcheting up the tension as the story unfolds, up until you get right to the climax of the story. And by the time you get there, because of its length and because of how much they're actually able to pack in to its nearly 18-minute runtime, it almost kind of feels like you've had a feature film experience, just because of how well they pace the story, how much they communicate visually, which allows you to subconsciously be thinking about one aspect of the film while you're consciously taking in another, and also the craft that's on display as well. It's just on another level. And as I said, this film came out in 2013, and in the 7 years since, I have seen very few films that top this in terms of the overall experience it gives you. It is just one of those top tier films that that stays with you, as evidenced by the fact that we're talking about it in 2020 when it was made in 2013. So yeah, an absolute belter of a short film, and a definite recommendation from both me and George. And as always, you can find the link to our review in the episode notes and the link to the film in the review as well. So that is The Landing by Josh Tanner. Give that one a watch at your earliest. So our second short film is actually an Oscar winner. It won the Best Live Action Short earlier this year, and was written and directed by Marshall Curry, based on the story as recounted by Diane Weipert. This film is called The Neighbor's Window. So this tells the story of a mother who's grown frustrated with her husband and her daily routine, but her life is shaken up when two free-spirited 20-somethings move in across the street and she discovers that she can see into their apartment. The very first thing I said after watching it was, "I'm not crying, you're crying." It just blew me away. It just blew me away. I mean, it seems to cram in. And this is something it has in common with The Landing, actually, is that it seems to cram in a feature film's worth of character journey into roughly 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And there's absolutely no sense of it feeling forced or rushed or overstuffed. It doesn't feel overlong. At no point did, I mean, as you said about The Landing, at no point did I check the duration of the video. I just was able to just sit and absorb it. And it genuinely, genuinely moved me when I got to the end. In fact, even before you get to the end, I mean, you completely get why the main character, Ali, played by Maria Dizier, is so frustrated. You get why she's on edge all the time. I mean, particularly me as a parent, I've been in that whole situation where no matter how much work you do, there is always mess somewhere. A lot of parents will be able to relate to that feeling of feeling like they're the only one doing any work, or they're the only one doing any looking after of the kids, while the other one is just kicking back with their feet up and just having a grand old time while they're suffering in silence. without realizing that both of you are going through that same experience. And the sort of window into the neighbor's apartment is almost kind of a window through time where you're looking back at a point in your life where you don't have responsibilities, where you don't have kids that can't look after themselves, where life essentially just consisted of exploring exciting new careers and having parties and just having sex all day, stuff like that. You know, you have that kind of sense of longing, of living vicariously, of jealousy. And it brilliantly establishes sort of the dangers of spending all of your time looking back instead of looking around you. And it does that brilliantly and beautifully as well, without being preachy, without being didactic in its message. It just kind of gives you an experience. And as I said, you're genuinely moved by it by the end of the movie. What were your thoughts on it, George?
Loved it. Yeah, same as you. I mean, I didn't cry at the end, actually, and I normally do cry at films, but I did just sort
Neither
of...
Neither did I.
Oh, yeah. Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, of course you didn't. Sorry. No. Yes, sorry. Let me rephrase that.
It's high pollen season.
Yeah.
I get
hay
fever.
Okay.
My nose runs, my eyes itch sometimes.
Sure.
It happens.
Yeah, I'm sure. I'm too...
Just coincidental that I was watching something emotionally moving at the time.
Yes.
But...
Sure.
All of that would have been happening anyway, so... Whatever. Anyway.
Anyway.
Didn't mean to interrupt you. You were saying something.
No, it's fine. Don't worry about it. It's okay. But I confuse myself with my own double negatives now, because now I don't know whether I'm supposed to say I didn't not cry also, because I didn't. So, oh dear, I've gone cross-eyed. Anyway, I enjoyed the film and I liked how in the last few moments you're hung on a, you know, without getting spoilers, you're hung on a long shot for a while, and it gave me frisson, you know, the hairs on the back of my neck stood up, not from suspense, but from pure emotion, like a pure emotional response that I had, without any tears leaving the ducts in my eyeballs, but just from staring there, I was there, I was with it, and the film had me, and I loved it. I'd like being challenged in that regard, and that was really enjoyable. Great acting, obviously, the performances in this are amazing. Maria Dizier, I recognise her from Orange is the New Black. She always seems to play a pregnant woman or a mum. In everything I've seen her in, she's either like just had a baby or is pregnant with one. I don't know if she's just pregnant a lot in real life, so the actress chooses a lot of roles, or obviously she's a mum, so it's easy for her to do that. I don't know. I could spend hours trying to hypothesize that. Either way, she is very believable as a tired mother, so it works very well for the performance. I really liked in the middle the sort of, it's almost like a music video interlude, which is kind of like how I can understand how you'd say that the film feels like a massive feature squished into, well, not squished, because it doesn't feel squished, but one way that they've got sort of got away with that and done that is there's almost like a music interlude in the middle with a really nice song. And as that's happening, you're seeing the sort of time passing quite quickly and lots of different sort of scenes are happening with that. And I really liked that. I thought that was a nice almost break in the narrative, but still kept the narrative going, if you get what I mean by that. I just thought that was very, very effective.
Yeah, absolutely. And in that as well, they managed to really capture New York, which is where the film is set, without doing all the obvious stuff, you know, without seeing the Statue of Liberty and the Empire State
Yellow cabs, all that.
Brooklyn Bridge. Yeah, exactly. You don't need... I think there's probably one establishing shot right at the beginning that shows you the New York skyline. Aside from that, it's all neighborhoods. It's kind of like the local grocery store, it's the intersection outside the apartment, and you do get a sense of the entire environment that they live in as opposed to just the apartment. So it kind of opens it up out into the wider world without having to do all the standard visual tropes of showing you all of the recognizable elements of New York, but it just feels like New York. So they did really, really well in terms of communicating that, and just beautifully captured as well. There's so much of what gets communicated to you is done through the way that the environment is captured. There's a scene where Ali comes in with the kids, sees her husband on the phone. He's working, clearly, but he's having what seems like a pretty informal chat with somebody. Yeah. And you can see the two beer bottles on the table, plus the binoculars. So immediately in her mind, she's like, he's been drinking, chatting and watching the neighbors all day. Well, I've been busting my butt with the kids. Yeah. And she doesn't have to say it. The scene kind of builds to an emotional peak around what she thinks he's been doing. But you know where it's going from the outset without a word of dialogue being spoken. So the way it kind of visually communicates all of those things before the dialogue has to step in, that basically means the dialogue has to do very little heavy lifting.
Yeah.
And it can just go straight into the core of the scene without the dialogue having to kind of set the scene, if you like, because the scene's already set by what you can see. So it's a masterclass in show, don't tell.
It's a short feature, definitely.
Absolutely. So this joins the list of shorts that we've reviewed where we recommend that you find as big a TV as possible to watch it on.
Yes.
Just so you get a full sense of everything that is captured. A good short film is shot as if it is intended to be seen on a big screen.
Yeah.
Even though the overwhelming likelihood is that it will be seen on a laptop or some kind of handheld device or something like that, it should still be designed to be experienced cinematically. And this definitely is. There are a few others we've talked about that do the same thing. And this is definitely one of those things. And I would say very, very deserving of the Oscar that it went on to win.
Yeah, I'd say.
So just an absolutely outstanding short film. A great experience. We definitely recommend it. Check out our review. Follow the link in the episode notes. And check out the film, which we've linked in the review as well. So those are our movies. And once again, that is our episode. So thank you very much for joining us. If you are looking for short films to get your teeth into, head over to cameolaunch.com, check out our previous reviews and the films that we have spoken about. You can also go to our podcast page and subscribe to our podcast so you get your alerts each time a new episode is published. Additionally, as a filmmaker, if you are looking for a platform to help you get a little bit more publicity for your film, a few more eyes on your project, and if you're looking for someone to review your film, then please do submit your film to the Cameo Launch Showcase for consideration. So head over to filmfreeway.com/Cameo Launch Showcase and your film could be next in our lineup. And if you want roundups of our new movies and a link to our podcast, then head over to cameolaunch.com and subscribe to our newsletter for regular updates as well. So, thanks once again. We hope you're all continuing to stay safe. As things start to edge back to normality, please do remain careful, remain vigilant, take care of yourself and your loved ones, and we hope to catch you on the next episode. So, in the meantime, it's goodbye from the holiest of the moles, Mr. George Mole.
Goodbye, everyone.
And it's goodbye from me. We'll see you next time.
See ya.